In today's episode, I discuss what happens when the planet Earth is on the brink of collapse. Within the next 3 decades, our home will be unable to sustain human life. There is no saving the world, so if humanity is going to survive, we need to act quickly. We need to execute a mass exodus to a world that is as Earth-like as possible, using only the technology we will have access to near term. Can this be done? More importantly, is there even a world that we could escape to? Thankfully, yes. I'm Sean Kenny, and this is Rock Logic. Hello and welcome to Rock Logic. I'm your host, Sean Kenny. Before we get started, I want to ask you to hit the like button, subscribe to the channel. If you like today's episode or want to ask me something, please leave your comments below. Your feedback helps us out a great deal. Okay, so scary intro aside, let's get a few things out of the way. First off, no, I don't think the world is going to end within the next 3 decades. If anything, I am passionately optimistic about the future of humanity, and if you are a subscriber to the channel, you probably know why. However, the scenario I just outlined does bring up an interesting question. If a cataclysmic event such as an asteroid strike or a nuclear holocaust were to doom the Earth to a future where humanity couldn't live on it, what could we do? And more importantly, where could we escape to? First, let us set some ground rules. In this scenario, we're going to say that in the year 2052, planet Earth is going to suffer from a meteor impact that will render our environment uninhabitable. Underground shelters are off the table, so to preserve life, we need to evacuate. We need to go somewhere or build some kind of habitat that can sustain millions of people at the very least. We can only use technology that either exists now or will be available in the coming years. Lastly, we need to make sure that wherever we go is as Earth-like as we can possibly make it. This is because we need to ensure that humans can comfortably adapt to their new surroundings, both physically and psychologically. All right, now that the rules have been set, I have some good news. We will have most, if not all, the technology we need to accomplish this. Elon Musk founded SpaceX in 2002 for two reasons. One, rocket technology had not really advanced after 1961 up to that point. If humanity was going to leave Earth, we needed better and more cost-effective rockets. Secondly, he believed that humanity needed a way to become multiplanetary as an insurance policy to ensure that life would go on in the event of a mass extinction event. In the 20 years since, we now know that multi-stage reusable rockets can work and be cost-effective. Right now, they are building and testing the Starship rocket, which will serve as humanity's workhorse in aiding in our journey across the stars. This is great because we need something that is both reusable and capable of sending massive amounts of cargo and people into space. However, one has to ask, is Mars the best choice? Don't get me wrong, Mars is great, and I could list all the reasons why we need to colonize it. But here are the drawbacks. 62% less gravity than Earth, little atmospheric protection, limited access to solar power, and it's really cold. Building habitats to protect us in a harsh environment is not beyond our technical understanding. While many would jump at the chance, it's probably the least Earth-like and thus harder to adapt from a physical or psychological standpoint. Okay, well, we could just build space colonies. At least with this plan, we can build worlds to your ideal specifications. Artificial gravity can be achieved by rotating the habitat. The environment is pressurized, so no suits are required, and temperatures would be ideal for human beings. Sounds great, right? Easier said than done. Aside from the obvious challenges of building such a habitat that could house thousands or even millions of people, protecting them from external perils involved with free-floating space colonies is something we have yet to address. In space, you need to address solar flares, cosmic radiation, and micrometeorite impacts. I haven't even gone through the complete list of hazards, but the ones I've listed should be enough to scare anyone into not going. But what if there was a place, somewhere closer to home, a place that was as Earth-like in both climate, gravity, and pressure, a place where you had an atmosphere that could protect you from solar flares and cosmic rays while still giving you bountiful access to solar power? Well, that planet is Venus. And while it may not look like an ideal place to settle, it holds a secret. Comparing the two worlds together, we see that they are both of similar mass and density. Many would argue that is really where the similarities end. They aren't entirely wrong. While Mother Earth is a garden world complete with multiple biospheres, copious amounts of water on its surface, Venus is probably the closest thing to hell we can find in our solar system. For starters, the average day is 243 Earth days. So a good chunk of the planet is facing the sun, while the other side spends most of the year in perpetual darkness. The atmosphere is mostly comprised of CO2 and sulfuric acid. As we get down to the surface, things get even worse. Aside from the lack of water and the active volcanoes in every direction, the pressure is roughly 1,350 psi. That is roughly 93 times that of Earth at sea level. To put that into perspective, imagine being 3,000 feet below the surface of the ocean. If that wasn't enough, the average surface temperature is 467 degrees Celsius or 872 degrees Fahrenheit. That is more than hot enough to melt lead. So clearly, I'm doing a horrible sales pitch here. Some of you may be wondering, why would I consider this planet a better candidate for settlement than Mars? As stated previously, Venus holds a secret. If you just go 50 kilometers up from the surface of Venus, you get an atmosphere similar to Earth at sea level, roughly 1 bar of atmospheric pressure. The temperature cools down to about 75 degrees Celsius or 167 degrees Fahrenheit. Still pretty warm, but it's not going to melt your colony. However, if you get up to about 55 kilometers, the temperature gets down to about 27 degrees Celsius or 81 degrees Fahrenheit. That's Caribbean weather right there. Getting a colony up there is actually not as difficult as you might think, seeing as Venus's atmosphere is mostly comprised of CO2. You could float an entire base or even a large city in a balloon of breathable air. That is because our breathable air is far less dense compared to CO2. So doing this on one or even an entire network of floating habitats, you can achieve roughly 60% of the lifting power that helium has here on Earth. Now, as cool as all that sounds, why should we do this over building large space habitats closer to Earth? After all, in either case, you have to build these habitats from scratch. While that is certainly true, the act of building large aerostat colonies in the clouds of Venus is actually far less challenging than building large rotating space habitats. While building colonies in space could be feasible near term, the challenges stated previously cannot be ignored. And even when they are addressed, you still have the very real challenges associated with the lack of access to volatiles like water and oxygen. In space, everything has to be imported from either Earth or some other location in the solar system. And in our doomsday scenario, that simply isn't practical. On Venus, the story is very different. While water is not available on its surface, it can be extracted from the sulfuric acid rain in the clouds, along with carbon, oxygen, nitrogen, hydrogen, and sulfur. The air pressure outside would be roughly the same as the air pressure inside, so if there was a leak or tear in the hab structure, it would not be catastrophic as one on a space habitat would be. The loss of air would be very slow, so you would have ample time to address it. While floating through the clouds, you have ample access to solar power on all sides with little to no obscurities. And because the planet is closer to the sun, your solar panels are actually more efficient than they would be here on Earth. So no heavy power plants are required to run these colonies. Even at 50 kilometers above the surface, the clouds are still dense enough to provide ample amounts of protection from solar flares and cosmic radiation. So the materials needed to build these large structures can be as thin as you would like. Once enough material could be sent, eventually the colony would be self-sustaining. But that still leaves the question of building materials. If the colony were to expand, where could we get the required goods? This is where having an excess supply of CO2 creates another exciting opportunity. Assuming we can perfect the extraction and manufacturing techniques, we could use the free carbon in the atmosphere to make carbon fiber, which can house the domes and habitation components. Graphene could also be made to make solar panels, batteries, as well as superconductors and microprocessors. Hopefully, no doomsday scenario will ever actually come to pass. And even if such a horrible situation doesn't occur, I feel like the case for Venus can still be made. Even if we only send a few hundred colonists to Venus, the technological improvements that could be made to benefit Earth would be well worth the investment. It may give us ideas for better ways to settle other worlds, but that will be a subject for another episode. I'm Sean Kenny, and this is Rock Logic.